Welcome, everyone. We're back with another exciting episode of the 343 Sparkcast. I know we promised we were going to do one at E3.
We were promised hot tubs.
Yeah.
There was a hot tub.
Hey, you know what?
Double fail, Mr. Ellis.
I believe you left the standard beforehand, but some people may have gotten in hot tubs on Thursday night.
I think best we leave that alone.
Oh, indeed. So we're recording this the week after E3. A lot has happened since then, but we want to get together and chat a little bit about what everyone saw. Real quick, I'm David Ellis, designer here at 343 Industries. Joining me today is, of course, Frank O'Connor, franchise development director here at 343. And now we have two more guests I have to follow that. Josh Holmes is a franchise creative director at 343.
Hi.
And rounding out is Kiki Wolfkill, executive producer on Halo 4.
Hey, hey, hey.
She did it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can't believe I did that.
No one else is going to get that.
Horrible.
Yeah.
We usually have to re-record the intros like 4 or 5 times.
Not this time.
This time we're doing it live.
We're doing it live.
But we're all a little punch drunk, I think, at this point, coming back. Especially
and other kinds of drunk.
Yeah. Well,
perhaps. Yeah. We're over 21, so it's legal. You know, we're still in the afterglow of E3. It's always a lot of fun. You work crazy amounts of hours. It's insane. You say the same thing 80 times a day to the different people. But, you know, adrenaline just carries you through. And I got to say, like, this E3 for me was an amazing experience. I can only imagine what it was like for the rest of you there this year. Of course, we got a chance to show really a significant portion of the campaign for the first time. We had shown a little bits and pieces and kind of third person before the spring showcase. But then, of course, at the press briefing, Microsoft press briefing, we got a chance to show campaign. Yep. What'd you guys think about the reaction to everything that we showed? Of course, we got to introduce our new enemy class. And of course, we've been hinting at, since
the beginning of time.
Yeah.
We've been
100,000 years.
Yeah, we've been dropping
before
hints.
The ancient evil.
Don't worry, we'll show you one day. And we did. So.
Yeah, so I mean, Josh, I mean, Kiki and Frank, I mean, you were all there. I think it's one of those things, if you've never actually had a chance to go to E3 and actually had a chance to watch these press briefings in person, they read way different there in the event with the lights and the show. And
there's so much energy in the room. And for us to see it on that big screen and then have, you know, the lighting and everything that was coordinated with it. And, you know, it's kind of like these two disparate parts that were then melded together that we've been working on for so long, the live action piece and then obviously the game piece. And to see it all come together was amazing. And Kiki's done a ton of work on the live action piece.
I was going to say, Kiki actually was there on set where you
were filming. I was.
In Romania.
Bucharest.
All the way in Romania.
Yes.
I don't think that's a Romanian accent.
It was an adventure.
But I'm going with it.
For sure. No, you know, it was... it was such a steep dive to get everything ready for Monday, let alone what we did for the rest of the show. I don't think any of us were thinking a lot about what the reaction was specifically going to be up until we were there. Because every minute was, how do we get it there? Let's make sure everything looks right. Let's make sure we have lasers, because everything
sure
is better with lasers.
Freaking lasers.
No sharks, though. Not this year.
Next year. We have to outdo the lasers, so sharks is the first place I'd go.
Yeah, so it really wasn't until Monday morning where it was like, good Lord, we're actually here and people are going to react to it. And we started thinking about what that reaction was going to be like.
Yeah.
We also, like, we're going through the run-throughs leading up to it and seeing everything. And you know, I'm just going to focus on the live action piece for a second because, like, literally up until a week before, there were big parts of that were still green screen behind actors and stuff. And so you have to imagine we're looking at this piece leading up to you know, the big unveiling. And you've got, like, you know, whatever, wires on people dragging them across the floor, and you've got green screen, and you're like, don't worry, it's all going to come together. It's all going to be awesome and magical. And you're like, you have trust and belief, but you're kind of like, oh my God, it's like a week.
Yeah.
There's a week left and there's still these big parts.
This was a weird situation where actually the game portion of the demo was actually significantly done way before the live action stuff. And it's usually the opposite. It's usually the game stuff that's coming together at the last second. And, you know,
we were still tweaking the game stuff up until like a week before.
But we knew what it was going to look like.
But it was micro tweaks.
I was going to say, by E3 standards, that might as well be 6 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
Although I was looking at a video that we took of the build when we were kind of early in the E3 process. Yeah. And it was probably, what, like 8 weeks before the briefing. And it is unbelievable how far we came in that eight weeks with the game build.
Yeah, and I mean, some of it is gameplay related as
well. Like, it does play a little bit differently every time you play through it. Like, Fallon's playthrough wasn't quite as smooth as Josh's playthrough and so on. But it's, but yeah, I mean,
he'd never really played it before, so let's give him a little bit.
And of course, these kind of, and people know this, like these E3 demos, they have to be, our game's a sandbox game. I know, Josh, you talked about that this week with the community over at HBO, but they have to be constructed in such a way to hit that specific, you have a time slot.
Yeah. And you can't go over. So that was the thing, especially with the Fallon, thing that was giving me just crazy sweats was like, the demo is kind of constructed to show very specific parts of the sandbox experience and show them in kind of a concise manner that can fit that time signature. And so there are things in that demo that if you don't do them exactly it as breaks, you're supposed to do them, the whole thing blows up and breaks. And we should add that
there's a version of that level where that doesn't happen. I'm just saying the E3 version.
The E3 version has these like little constrained scripted moments that emulate what actually happens in the game systemically normally, right? Because it's a sandbox game. But to actually be playing that and have kind of like one shot, and you know that you're handing over the controller to someone who has no clue how to do it, and you're like, please don't break the game.
Yeah.
Please don't.
You were even talking about that even last week at E3, like the last night we were having drinks, the last night of the show. You're like, I don't know how we're going to pull this off.
No, I was like, I don't know. I'm going to have to like coach him on how to do it. And then we get there and it's like, no, you don't get to coach him. And that's why I yelled at him the whole time. It was just like, don't.
He seemed to appreciate the yelling.
Yeah, he sort of broke after a while.
But before we do go too far into like the E3 and Fallon stuff, I wanted to take it back to the Prometheans real quick.
Yeah.
We actually recorded a segment before we went down to E3, Frank and myself, with Matt Finley, who's a systems designer here on Halo 4, and Steve Dick, who's one of our lead animators. And we actually talked to them a little bit about bringing the Prometheans to life, both from a gameplay perspective and this movement, how they move around, because that's so important. I think we're going to throw to that real quick. And we will make references to hot tubs and E3. We're not actually in a hot tub. We're not actually at E3.
There were no hot tubs.
Yes.
That was totally false.
It's totally false. I made it up.
Yeah.
Yes. You win some, you lose some. Right. And in this case, I think we won because no one has to imagine us in a hot tub. So I think we're going to throw it over there and we'll be back. I think the segment runs about 30 minutes. So we'll be back and talk some more about E3 and maybe some Jimmy Fallon stuff. Well, that was a fantastic intro, Frank, that we just delivered.
Oh, you're welcome.
E3.
I'm exhausted.
It was amazing. Audio quality was perfect, which is surprising because we were recording it in a hot tub.
Yeah, absolutely.
That seems weird.
Everything in a hot tub.
And of course, our other two guests are staring at us, trying to figure out what the heck we're talking about. So, you know, of course, we recorded a couple of these segments early since we were down in LA by the time you're listening to this, hopefully, if it goes out on time, for, of course, E3. And, you know, we've been showing a lot, talking about a lot, and we figured this was a good opportunity to kind of take a little bit of a deep dive on some of the things you've seen this week and kind of talk about some things that you may not have heard about yet. So, at the Xbox media briefing, you saw the campaign premiere for Halo 4 with our campaign demo, which introduced our new enemy class. Frank, do you want to talk a little bit about what people saw?
Not until you introduce our other guests.
I just forgot to do that, didn't I? Well, they're such good friends. I figured, they don't need introductions.
They're friends of the people.
That's true. All right. So you already have heard mine and Frank's voice at this point in the podcast. Of course, I'm David Ellis. I'm a designer here at 343. Frank O'Connor, as always, is franchise development director.
And master of karate and friendship for everyone.
AKA the day man. And joining us this week are two very special guests. And the first off is a system designer.
Yeah.
Matt Finley.
Character designer, yeah.
Friend of the show, Matt Finley, to friend steal a phrase.
Show. Yes.
Long-time
listener, first-time talker.
Oh, that makes me very happy. Yeah, Matt loves to correct us when we say things incorrect on the podcast and then tells us what we said that was wrong.
Or incorrectly.
That's it, too. Either way.
We're going to get along just fine.
Can you describe a little bit what character system designer means?
Yeah, so I work on... characters in the game, developing their behaviors, developing how they look, what they do.
I thought you were going to say you were developing their systems.
Developing their systems.
And I was going to kick you right out of this room.
There are character systems, and I design them.
And rounding out this segment is Steve Dick, our lead animator here at 343. So, Frank,
Yes.
What did people see in the new character class?
They saw
who and what are they?
They saw some of our new character class. I'll be blunt because I don't want people asking me what's next. They saw that, honestly, the majority of the basic premise of the character class, and I want us to be really upfront about that. Character class is one of the things, when the first time we ever debuted Halo, or rather Bungie ever debuted Halo on the Mac, that you saw the majority of the characters there.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a repeat of that in some ways. There are different types of the class that you saw, as is true now and will always be true, and was true historically. And I just don't want people waiting for the next shoe to drop. So I'm getting that out of there. But they did see a small fragment of their behavior and a small fragment of their potential. And they also very specifically didn't see the sandbox interaction that's implied by the arrival of the Covenant early in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then followed by the interaction that they have with the Prometheans, as we're now publicly calling them.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, so the term Promethean, it means a lot to everyone in this room because, you know, we are students of lore of old.
Yeah.
But for people who maybe haven't read the books or...
As classical scholars, every last one of us. the Prometheans are definitely covered in the Greg Bear novels, the from Cryptum, Primordium, and soon Silentium, which is the working title of
that's
novel.
A world exclusive.
No, it's the working title. Good job, idiot. anyway, it's not, and now it's a world exclusive, and we're very proud to make that announcement here. That was the whole point of the podcast. Good job, Dave. the working title is Silentium. That is open to change at this point, but it's the one we like. But what I will say is the Prometheans are a race of warrior knights within the Forerunner Society. I don't really want to say too much more about their role or class because that's actually part of our story, not so much Greg's. And the things that you think you know about that class in the books may evolve or change as the as you play the game. And bluntly, the final chapter of that novel comes out after our game for a very, very good reason because some of that is revealed there. And they are Forerunner warrior servants. They're super powerful warriors. They were mostly outfitted, trained, and ultimately in some ways designed genetically and mechanically to fight the Flood.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll definitely see that even in the game demo. A lot of their power, a lot of their weaponry, a lot of the way they behave is a response to a very specific threat. And of course, the Master Chief isn't that threat, and so they're going to behave a little bit differently. The Covenant isn't that threat, so they're going to behave a little bit differently around the Covenant, at least in those early scenes. But there's a lot more to the story, and there's a lot more to the gameplay that we won't be revealing in this podcast.
So, Matt, I mean, you and Steve both have been here since the early days in the studio, the early days of the project. When you came on board, obviously, you know, the briefing of everything that was going on and what we were doing, planning with the project and the characters and everything. How did the both of you approach, and either one of you can answer this if you want to, but how did you approach actually introducing the first all new, completely brand new from the ground up set of characters introduced to Halo Sandbox since really Halo 2? That had to be pretty daunting, right?
Yeah. every now and then I realize what we're doing and I get a little scared, and then I see what we're doing and I get really excited. Initially, when I first heard of the Knights and heard their description, what really excited me is that they sounded like the Forerunner version of Chief, of a Spartan. Mm. They're genetically enhanced super soldiers, and they're built to defend the galaxy. And what I wanted to do was bring an adversary that was that galaxy superhero and work it into the Halo Sandbox, which is exciting and evolving and changes depending on what the player does. And we've got really good support to do that.
Yeah, I think part of that is also, I mean, a character isn't that intimidating when it's just standing still. So, Steve, it's you and your team that has to sort of bring them alive and actually make them move around.
So, yeah, from an animator standpoint, I mean, if you mention the word creatures to an animator, I mean, they start drooling, right? So, I mean, it's like, hey, there's three new creatures. So, I mean, it's the, having the fiction behind them is what we want. We want to know what these characters are all about. We want to know, you know, where they came from. We want to know their history. We want to have a reason for their existence. We take all that and then we think about all those things when we're thinking about how they move, you know, what's the role they used to play? What's the role we want them to play in our game? What do we want the player to feel when they see them the first time? So, you know, all those things factor into it. And with, like I said, with it being a creature, I mean, it just, the gloves are off, right?
Matt, if you could like succinctly kind of talk about like the, between the and having to be careful because we're so used to calling them by their old code names, but they have real proper names now. I almost accidentally said the wrong one. I guarantee one of us is going to slip up at some point during this podcast. But can you kind of describe broadly the role of the Knight, the Watcher, and the Crawler, and how they all work together in the sandbox, combat sandbox in Halo 4?
Yeah, sure. The Knight is the big man on the battlefield. He's the guy with the big weapon. He's going to be in the front line swinging his sword at you. The other two are more of a support class. The Watcher especially, which the Knight releases on the battlefield, and the Watcher hangs out, protects the Knight, protects the other characters that are on the Promethean side, supports them, provides all sorts of neat tricks and neat sandbox activity. The Crawlers, on the other hand, those are they're used to flush things out. Mm-hmm. They charge around the battlefield. They crawl on the walls. They sneak around corners.
They sort of work in groups too. They move in kind of almost like a bird-like flock.
Flocks and packs. Like yeah. A pack is what we really embraced. They move in packs. They attack like packs. They come charging in, and you'll think they're wow, it's a bunch of wolves, and then they'll crawl up the wall, and you're like, wow, it's a bunch of ants who are moving all over the place. So we wanted that group mentality, that swarm mentality, and. They're at the same time, they're fodder. Like you shoot them and they explode. And
yeah, we've been watching the demos and the playthroughs that we've been doing over and over again as we prep for E3. They just look fun to kill, yeah. And that's really deliberate. They're like bubble wrap. It's like pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, from the start, we wanted there to be tons of them. Like, and it's something that you can just lay into with a machine gun and they go exploding all over the place, pieces go flying, and 10 more come over the hill.
But if you stop paying attention to them and enough of them all group around you,
oh yeah,
you're going to go down really
quick. Or, the E3 demo in particular, I know for a fact is very, and it changes every time you play it, but the interesting thing about it is that they have a slightly different effect every time you encounter them. And sometimes it's pure cannon fodder, and sometimes it's just a little bit more challenging because they either happen in a different context with different bad guys there in the field, but they're just like incredibly satisfying to shoot. I've never had more fun shooting a bad guy.
It's funny, before you actually popped in, Frank, Matt and I were talking a little bit about the kind of the evolution, the genesis of them actually exploding when you pop them in the head. And it was actually for a very simple reason. There are these sort of four-legged creatures running around, and when you shot them and they just fell over, people felt a little bad.
Yeah, I felt like crying. It was pretty bad.
Well, I mean, canonically, and not to make it too boring, but they're also not organic creatures. We're not going to go in too much detail about the rest of the classes, but specifically the crawlers are not organic, so they can't be infected by the Flood. So they don't really have to worry as much about collateral damage on the battlefield as characters who would have 100,000 years ago been battling the Flood on the sort of outer reaches of foreigner society. So they're supposed to be observers and harriers, as it were, of the Flood. And so it all fits canonically with the backstory of these characters.
Yeah, so going back to the crawlers a little bit... people saw in the demo that they can actually walk on walls and ceilings and all manner of directions.
Are you confirming we have ceilings in the game?
Yes. That is another world exclusive.
Another world exclusive.
There will be ceilings. Back of the box feature.
But I know the answer to this question, but how difficult has that been to actually get to the point where they're actually doing that? Because it's not an easy... When you deal with a game, you have to artificially generate the physics, gravity, all these things. So then breaking those same rules, whether they're physics or gravity, it's not an easy task. And so what people see in those demos and they'll see in the months and once the game launches, it's a lot of hard work to get there and just to provide them with those additional kind of modes of movement and not just flat across the ground.
The thing that we got to give props to the big brains, the devs. They do a lot of the heavy lifting on that kind of stuff. Obviously, when they get on the walls, it's one of the cool things about the crawlers that they look totally different. So when you first see them and they're running around on the ground, you're like, okay, that thing looks like a quadruped. You might relate it to like a wolf or a dog or some sort of like, cat-like creature. But as soon as they get on the walls, as soon as they start doing some of the behaviors that are a little bit different than your generic quadruped, then you're like, whoa, what is this thing? It's something different, right? So... That's where the characters really stand out to me. And I mean, it's just a cool opportunity for like the animation of them as well, right? Like it's just something different. And hopefully when the players experience them for the first time, they have that same reaction. They're like, whoa, what the hell? This thing's on a wall now, right?
I mean, you talked about actually starting on sort of a flat horizontal plane on the ground, but then transitioning to more of a vertical when it comes to either walls or even in some cases the ceiling. How did you approach actually making that? Because in shooters, traditionally, most of the action is horizontal. How do you keep the crawlers from being annoying when they actually head up high, similar to some, you know, there have been other characters in the Halo games before. The buggers, for example, in Halo 2, of course, Halo 3, you know, they could kind of fly all over. Sometimes they were difficult to track. I mean, what kind of lessons did you learn from that and apply them to bringing the crawlers to life?
Yeah, specifically from the buggers. The buggers' main movement was vertical, up, down, up, down, up, down. And one thing we tried to do with the crawlers was get them to get up on the walls and then slowly move around and strafe. We slowed them down quite a bit. Additionally, we have the watchers in play, you know, almost all the time, which are kind of a mid-ground. They're sitting at head level of a knight most of the time. They will flee and go a little bit higher, but they're constantly bringing your reticle up a little bit to where the crawlers are going to end up. So we try and meet that middle ground with the watchers. Once the crawlers get up on the wall, they slow down quite a bit, and they're not, you know, once when they're on the ground, they're moving around really fast. They get up on the wall, and they're a lot easier to track and easy to kill. You shoot them in the head.
You know, you just made a great point about the watchers, which is that they're powerful in their own right, and they're absolutely hyper strategic in both the way they behave and the way that the knights take advantage of them. But they're a real distraction too, and that's one of the interesting things about fighting, especially Prometheans, is you have to make some really serious decisions about who you take out first. And you see that in all our gameplay demos. Like, we've done this a million times, and you're never quite sure.
Yeah.
What you should take out first, and you see that you can see the choice in the way the reticle's moving.
Yeah, that's
and
really
that
fun.
Demo is like, what should I do here? And I wish I could tell you the answer is always take out the watcher, always take out the crawlers, and always take out the knights first. I can't tell you which one is the most suitable to deal with in what order, because it does change.
And it depends on how many of them are around the battlefield too. Because if there's one watcher, then you can kind of leave them alone a little bit. If there's more than one, you should probably start picking them off, because when they start teaming up together, they can be oddly deadly, and you don't really expect it, because there's been like sort of flying support class in the case of the engineer in Halo 3 ODST and then to a lesser extent in Reach, but it was very passive. It was something that sort of laid back and it would shield, but it didn't really do much else than that. And the Watcher, as you've seen in the demo, is mostly defensive in nature, but if you rile him the wrong way, he's going to get upset.
Well, he can really change the nature of the battlefield as well in some really specific ways that weren't shown in the demo.
Yes.
And you have to keep that in mind as you approach those encounters.
Yeah, I like to think of the Watcher as a force multiplier. Like, you put one in and, you know, with a knight, and it makes the encounter, you know, 1.5 times as hard. You put two in and it's a completely different encounter.
But I mean, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air, but like, if you were to say put 10 or 15 in with nothing else, it's a completely different experience.
Yes, it is.
And that's actually the really interesting thing for myself, as I've kind of worked with them in some of my stuff in Spartan Ops, is that you really you can have a lot of fun with just having them all work together, but then using them on their own in ways that you wouldn't necessarily think right off the bat to use them. You can use Watchers as very aggressive, offensive enemy types if you place them in the right places and give them the right amount of friends to fight alongside.
Well, and friends bring friends. You know, knights are bringing watchers in, watchers are bringing pawns in. So the encounter is frequently changing. And that goes back to what Frankie was saying, of you don't know which one you're supposed to take out first.
You know,
if you take out the knight first, the watcher is going to bring in more crawlers.
We're creating this really, really reduced set of villains that we're talking about. They can all interact with the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't get into too much detail about how that happens, but there's a matrix there that becomes really relevant later on in the game and is really changes the sandbox almost as much as the addition of those characters. There's just the pure interaction of those characters. If those were Covenant classes, but like whatever, Jackals or Grunts or whatever, it would be just as radical a shift. It's a really huge change in the way that you're going to approach campaign. And Spartan Ops, that's not much of a secret. The Spartan Ops stuff that you've seen today absolutely includes Prometheans too.
Yep. In fact, really, there might be a shot of me punching one in the face thanks to one of Steve's new animations in Assassinations.
And speaking of Sandbox, that includes their weapons.
Yeah.
It's not just the bad guys. It's the stuff that they carry around on the field with them and the stuff they use. Now that's at least weapons.
That's one of my favorite things to do is, especially in if people have seen a little bit of B-roll from the Spartan Ops mission we were featuring at E3. I love grabbing the scatter shot, which in basic terms is easy to describe as sort of a Forerunner shotgun.
I knew you were going to say Forerunner shotgun.
Well, I said
it's
totally
different. It's a Needler shotgun.
It's a close range weapon that fires. Oh, wait. No.
But the cool thing, one of the cool things about that is when you shoot an enemy, they just sort of disintegrate. But in a very, it just never seems to happen the same way every time. It depends on how their body falls, and there can be some really cool experiences in that. And there's something utterly satisfying about having this huge, big, hulking knight. Of course, if you saw the campaign demo, they're scary as hell, especially if they're coming charging for you and they're getting ready to give you their backhand or back axe or whatever that is on the left side of their body. I don't know quite how to describe it, but when they're getting ready to karate chop you with that thing, you're going to enter a world of hurt, but being able to just release that scatter shot and just send them flying away like digital feathers in the wind, there's just something inherently satisfying about that. One of the things I also want to talk about is the fact that we were talking about the Watcher a little bit. He doesn't have a lot to sort of communicate with, but I think between the animations and some other methods that we can't talk about in this podcast, you actually, I don't know, you guys have done a really good job of actually giving some a lot of personality to these artificial creatures based on how they move their bodies. You sort of know what they're about to be doing and how they're kind of where they're at in the battle at that point.
Sure, yeah. Personality is the key word there, where we want each of the characters to kind of have obviously their own and their own apart from the Covenant characters. We don't want just the Knight to be, this is just the Forerunner elite.
You know, which he's more powerful. Like you got a sense of that from the campaign demos. They pack quite a punch, and they don't need an energy source to pack it.
So, I mean, it's one of those things that we, as much as possible, we try and inject personality, and that comes from, you know, what design wants the characters to be capable of doing. And then also just our own take from an animation standpoint of okay, what's this character just look like when he's just moving around? You know, it doesn't mean that he's got to be boring. He can have some quirky personality to him, right? So I mean, like Watchers, they're one of those characters that, to me, they're the guys you just love to hate, because it's so rewarding when you do kill him. You're just like, yeah, finally got that guy, because he's been like pissing you off for the last couple minutes.
Yeah.
And I would say crawlers are kind of in the same boat. Whereas knights, they're a little bit different, where you're kind of a little bit scared of them. You're like, whoa. So obviously everything they do, has a little bit of that built into it, where it's a little bit more imposing. They're a little bit more confident in their own actions and stuff like that. And they're not going to be really faltering what they're doing based off of what you've done. They're just going to go about their business until you take them out or they take you out.
You mentioned the different types of movement stuff that actually reminded me to go back to something that Frank actually said earlier, which is the fact that these Prometheans were sort of put to task to actually fight the Flood. And to be able to match the Flood, I mean, as anyone who's played through the other Halo games, the Flood were able to move in ways that even the elites weren't able to. They were able to jump 10, 20 feet in the air and be able to close the distance really quick. And it's not something we necessarily saw today, but the Knights, they have some hops to them, and they have very unorthodox design to their body, but man, they can leap, and that's pretty. You saw a little bit of it in one of the charges in the campaign demo, but they can really close distance fast. So you can think you have them under control, and then they will just completely flip switch, and you go from offense to defense in a matter of seconds. What kind of things have you guys done to sort of telegraph that to the player? So a very smart player will be able to catch subtle things so that they can expect those kind of movements, so that it's not just a cheap kind of instant kill, oh, I didn't see that coming kind of thing.
Yeah, we... There are a few ways that the Prometheans move across ground, and we try and give a tell for each case. And you notice in the demo, there's a couple of them. You miss one of them because you're looking the other way. But before the one character zips up real close to Master Chief and takes a strike at him, there's a big pose. When he dissolves into particles and moves to another place, that's at a predictable time. It's something that characters can know. And there's a little bit of a tell in which direction that he's going. And that's one of the rewarding things of watching some of our tests is watching people's reticles follow where they expect the knight to go.
I got to say, there's nothing more satisfying than just as the knight is getting ready to kind of teleport away, finishing him off before he completes the teleport because he's still vulnerable.
Yes.
It's super satisfying.
And I've seen, you know, people guessing where he's going to end up and dropping a grenade right there, and he shows up on the grenade, and that's exciting.
That kind of, I mean, that factors into what we were talking about before, too, with decisions about who you kill first, right? Based off of what knight you're facing, you might want to be like, oh, man, this guy leaps at me. I better take him out first. Or maybe you're like, oh, okay, this guy's going to zip towards me. I don't need to worry about him. I'm going to take out the watchers first or whatever, right? So it's always an interesting kind of grab bag when you're facing these guys.
It's also going to be dependent on your gameplay style as well. I know a lot of players who, especially SWAT players, who know where head height is and can really adjust from that. But people who are good at vertical combat are going to make different decisions than people who are good at lateral combat. And people who are good at sort of general sandbox juggling, which is, I think, what a lot of people are going to be trained to do properly in a campaign this time around.
One of the coolest features in the sandbox, which until I saw the campaign demo, which I have to give just all kinds of credit to everyone on the team who worked on that thing.
We took them at the E3 campaign demo.
The E3 campaign demo.
M60, which,
yeah.
So, I mean, you guys talked about that. I mean, that it's going to be slightly... We don't know exactly how it's going to be at E3 because we don't know which path the player is going to take and so on and so on. But yeah, there's some really different ways to approach just those brief encounters.
So one in particular, which I have a feeling that I know who's going to be playing for that demo, and I know that what that person likes to do, so I have a feeling that they're going to do it. Is the watcher can grab your grenade and sort of toss it back to you, but
it's actually pretty easy to make the watcher grab your grenade.
Yeah, you just have to throw it basically
for
right
that
at it.
Reason. Yeah,
but the cool thing is if you actually kill the watcher as it's tossing around, if there's any enemies running underneath it, it's just going to drop right there
the
and place and blow them up.
And boom, the whole.
I didn't know that was even possible until I saw that demo, oh, nice. And now ever good. Since then, I've been trying to pull that off.
It's, the watchers, hopefully as you'll see in the demo, can grab any tossed. Grenade and do a bunch of other things we won't go into right now. But but when they grab your grenades, just as you thought you were the king of the world, and then they can throw them back at you. As David said, you can shoot it out of their hands effectively by killing them.
Well, if you're playing co-op, whether it's in the campaign or even in Spartan Ops, you actually have to be careful because if... If you're with a buddy and he throws a grenade at a watcher and he tosses it back into your buddy, it could end up hitting you in the back of the head.
Or sticky if it's plasma.
Exactly.
Be careful with your grenades when dealing with ancient alien civilizations is the basic advice here.
That's actually a really good segue. I wanted to talk a little bit about, specifically about the knight movement. We talked about that a little bit before, but the knight has a very unusual design when you actually break it down and really look into the details of the character. You'll see that it's not... altogether solid and connected, which ties into the Forerunner kind of technology and everything. What kind of struggles or difficulties or challenges is actually a better term did that present to you as an animator?
Struggles, difficulties, and challenges. I like to think of the knight as kind of part predator, part alien, part our own kind of little twist on cool. Obviously, with its scale. Having the big carapace that you probably saw if you look closely in the E3 demo that bishops can be in there. It makes the character a little bit different in terms of just your generic biped. With it being as tall as it is, I guess it's like, how tall is it, Matt? Like 15 feet tall almost?
Yeah.
12 feet?
13, 12 or 13, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's big. So obviously one of the things with all that's kind of weight behind it. We want to make the character look really heavy, really imposing, but at the same time, it's capable of doing things like moving really quickly. So really it's a lot of iteration, until we just nail things down and are, through play tests and stuff like that, feedback we get from design, from testers and stuff like that, from user groups. Until we get to the point where like, okay, we're heading down the right path here. And then when we get something that's working, we just dial in on that until it's exactly what we want it to be. And the knight was, exactly that scenario. where we rework the character completely a couple times.
Yeah. We can't talk about details on that.
Yes, many times.
But it's gone through its iterations to get to the point that it's at right now. And I mean, it's the coolest thing I think about it is that through those iterations, we came up with something that was unique. You know what I mean? It's a unique character. It's not like people can look at it and go, oh, well, that's just this character from this movie or from this game or something like that. It's its own cool thing. So yeah, hopefully when people play against them, they're gonna experience the same thing.
I don't think you could have ended this segment on a better note. I think that was just about perfect. Frank, anything else you wanted to add to this particular segment before we throw it back to ourselves?
No, just that the timeline for our fiction has been like weirdly carefully handled for years and years and years, and so most of the revelations about the Prometheans, most of the revelations about the plot are going to be in the game. There's definitely some teases in the fiction before that, the Greg Bear novels, even some of the Karen Travis stuff, all ties in. There will be loads of resonance. There will be loads of reference, and people should just relax. There aren't going to be any spoilers in the books necessarily. And a lot of stuff, a lot of questions that they'll be asking after the game in November are going to be answered when the novel, the third and final Greg Bear novel, comes out. And I say final part of the Forerunner trilogy. Hopefully Greg still loves us after this nightmare that he's been through. But, you know, that's part of it is working with Greg, working with the animators, working with the designers, working with the engineers to make all of this stuff like high up and work, and but by the same token, giving each of those disciplines the ability to actually do their stuff without wrecking it or without like enforcing our stupid ideas on it has been it's just worked out really well, and I think that there's been a good payoff for everybody involved, and I hope people like playing against these characters when they finally get the game on November 6th.
Well, I think we're gonna toss it back to Frank, myself.
Don't toss it, because obviously a watcher will grab it and throw it back in your stupid face.
So before we head out, just want to say, Matt, Steve, absolute pleasure. You guys should definitely come back. Steve, definitely we should have you come back and just do an entire segment on the art of the assassination.
Oh, yes.
Oh yeah.
Because there is some stuff you just haven't even seen yet.
Glorious
assassination. Just make your mind just blow it up to pieces. So.
And the acceleration... deceleration animations. I was watching some finished ones.
Yeah. Like, wow. They look amazing. So we'll throw it back to me. And we're back.
Wow. That was amazing.
That was really
incredible.
Fast. You did the best
Finley
reenactment
and Dick,
of
that
Finley
was amazing.
Ever.
You were great too, Frank.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, did we talk about on that podcast that Matt Finley was the male designer that we put on Cortana?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy Finley. Yeah. There's actually, there's a fake ESRB rating at the beginning of our game right now. And we have all the descriptors in there. And one of them is what? Finley's creepy noggin. Yeah. Because his face gets put on all the characters.
I wonder if we'll probably release that picture at some point. Maybe.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think we should.
It's a dark moment.
Maybe I should put it as the album cover for this podcast. So it's like an Easter egg.
And if you guys didn't talk about that in that last segment, everyone's like, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah. So Matt Finley, the very deep voice, but Matt Finley, who's got a
very
great voice for radio. I kind of hate him for that.
He has a deep voice?
I don't know.
Surprisingly, on microphone, you don't necessarily expect it. But So Matt Finley was the designer that Kiki had talked about, I think, a couple podcasts ago.
Yeah.
Where we were just showing how robust our animation and capture system is. And since then, we've put him on even more characters,
yes,
but
we
can't talk about some of those quite yet.
He is actually the face of one of our Marines.
Yes.
So that's why we don't just like just randomly scan.
In fact, for a while there,
studio.
He was the face of all the Marines.
Yeah.
He was the first one we got in.
So I felt the need to shoot and melee him to death
perhaps,
at every opportunity.
And maybe crouch on top of his corpse.
That's true.
In a victory style repetitious movie.
Which is back for Halo 4, according to Kotaku.
Exclusive. You know, and Kevin Franklin had a world exclusive in an interview.
Nice.
You may have seen it.
Teabagging is back, people.
Like, and he's a good friend. Steven
what's
Sotelo.
Teabagging?
I don't know. I
sorry.
I mean,
celebratory crouching.
So.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
That's part of E3. Actually, I think that's actually a really good segue for E3 because you never know what's going to come up in conversation or interview when you're
Speaking
at E3.
Speaking of crouching in a victorious manner.
This is the worst segue I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
history.
No, yeah. No. Be confident.
You can't just say the word segue and go to anything.
Absolutely, you can. That is the magic of the segue.
All right.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
All right.
So, Kiki, I think you were the first one to go down for E3. I think you went down Tuesday or Wednesday before?
Tuesday before.
Yeah. And then... Frank, you and Josh went down Saturday or
no, we
Thursday.
Thursday.
That's
Thursday,
right. Because we recorded the segment on Wednesday.
Yeah, we had to go do like dry runs and dress rehearsals and drink a lot.
So Galen Center doing dry runs.
By the way,
runs.
How many people did we sneak in?
Oh yes,
hundreds.
Actually, let's talk about that. So
they were all valid,
totally valid
audience members,
and myself included. It's weird. Every year, it's always tough, and I'm doing air quotes here, to get into these press briefings beforehand because there's no seats available. It's insane. There's just
don't even
just
show up.
Yeah, don't bother. Yeah. Like, who are you? What do you do?
You're here for the Dave Ellis party? Who are you? I'm Dave Ellis. Well, you can't get in. You're not on the list. This is almost a real thing.
That is actually
it is almost a real thing. And it's the same everywhere, whether it's Sony, Nintendo, whatever. But of course, some of us, you know, we have friends in other parts of the company, so we're able to get like regular kind of folk passes to kind of get in there, and we're standing in line, and Kiki, maybe the MVP move of the week, comes walking out, and she just like flashes her hand like she's holding a deck of cards, and there's just like VIP passes just falling to the ground. And so Kiki's able to get all of us in there, and we're like, we're feeling all special. We have our VIP passes. We get in there, we get seated, we have like a whole 343 section. And as we're sitting down, Kiki's like, I need those back. I stole them from people to get you guys in here.
Yeah. Well, first I had to use them for other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
and
were
then
the
I had
third
to return
batch.
Them.
I'm okay
you
being
You thought
tier
you were all Oprah B's, but you were Oprah C's.
I'm okay with that. As long as I'm Oprah anything.
But we did have our own cheering section. We had our own 343 section. Yep. We represented at Galen Center.
I hope April McKee isn't listening.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that.
The chances of that are
slim.
Yeah, pretty far out there. But we're going kind of way off topic here. But oh, well. But like actually being able to see that, we had been described, like I know Kiki, you and Josh just kind of talked about what the event was going to be like. And people didn't really see this at home because the TV cameras are cutting between gameplay.
So first of all, that was the worst coverage. I've actually gone back and looked at it because people were complaining about it. Number one, they start partway into the piece, right? So they start late.
I.e. they missed the beginning.
I.e. they missed the beginning.
Live TV isn't easy.
Yeah. They missed the beginning.
But then we have a whole conversation about, remember, this thing starts from black almost immediately.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. We're like, yeah, you know what? Don't miss it. So they miss it. And then on top of that, on like all these totally unexplainable cues, they pull out and like pan out to a full, like, I don't even know what they're trying to show. Blackness surrounding a square. And then push back in.
I've been told
like,
that if you watched it online,
yeah,
it was actually better. It was more like direct feed kind of stuff rather than just the house kind of camera shooting stuff.
Yeah, so. Because there was actually cool stuff going on in the house.
Yeah.
But none of that got shown. So they just pulled out to show black.
Yeah, my favorite part, and I have to be careful in the words I choose to describe it, but there's a section where the Infinity is sort of being scanned before it's pulled in. And there's like this kind of beam that's flowing through. And it was actually synced up perfectly with the crazy speakers inside the Galen Center, which apparently we had to like warn the seismic center there at USC every time we were doing like a test run because it actually triggered their
earthquake
seismometers.
I don't know what they're called. It's called scientifically.
So we had to warn them, and so the sound was awesome. The bass was just rumbling. It was awesome. But then as that scan was going through, there was actually like lasers that would actually scan the entire crowd, and it was synced. I have to say, it was synced perfectly. And so we knew it was going to happen. And so for us, like when it actually happened and it was like on sync, it was like super exciting. I sort of wish someone in our group had actually had like a little cell phone kind of recording it. I think other people
would have
just
held it vertically and ruined it for everyone.
It's a fair point.
It's still like we probably watched that, I don't know, half dozen times in rehearsals at least. And it still caused chills every time just because it was so well produced and put together with all the light show and and the sound and the vibration and everything. And in the lead up, it was interesting because, you know, you're always nervous about any time you're going to show the world anything.
Yeah.
And in the lead up, we're watching it and we're like, wow, this is amazing being able to see this. But we're asking people, you know, we're polling everybody there to see what they think. And they were all giving us great feedback, like, oh, it looks awesome. It's amazing. And you're like, okay, I don't know.
Do you really mean that?
Do you really mean that? Yeah. Because you'd completely lose perspective with your own work.
So at the start of this this podcast, you said that, you know, what was it like, you know, basking in the afterglow?
No, I don't think I said that.
No, you did. He said,
you did actually say exactly those words.
That might be in the Easter egg. No, after music, post credits.
But it made me uncomfortable because of the fact that we all have to eventually roll into the wet spot of E3. And that's where we are now, which is you've been gone for a week, maybe 2 weeks, really, in terms of real work time.
Yeah. Regardless of how good your E3 is, the shit still hits the fan when you come back.
Yeah,
you've missed 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Not that I'm complaining. I was taking my first official day of vacation since I joined Microsoft 2.5 years ago. I'm a stupid person. You should just ignore me. And I was going to be gone like Friday before, like the week before E3. And like that night, I get 33 meeting requests for pre-E3 stuff. So I ended up coming in for that because like I wanted to make sure I was like on board with it and everything, making sure. But like it was ironic. It was like
the prep meetings, right?
Yeah.
See, this is what people don't understand is like when you're going to go to E3.
It doesn't just happen.
It doesn't just happen. You don't just show up and wing it.
Something out of a folder and copy on it.
Yeah, okay, we're good to go.
Out of my bed. No, I'm just going to coffee
it
and
is
talk.
A process. Yeah. And like we spent 2 months working on the actual build stuff that we were going to show and you know, sort of branching that off and doing the thing that we were going to show. But then you guys basically sat in a meeting room for the better part
and
of
gave
an
our
entire
presentations
week.
For the theater.
Yeah.
Like, and nonstop.
Drill.
And
drill.
I still like sometimes I'll wake up from a fever dream even this week and just be mid sentence and it'd be like, Spartan Ops is our new campaign, cooperative campaign experience.
Yeah.
Your dreams suck, dude.
They do. You would be shocked what the percentage of that are work or Halo related dreams at this point.
Most of them are about stripper
clowns. Yeah. Yours are what?
Stripper clowns.
Yeah.
Leave me no, female
that's
stripper
nightmares.
Clowns.
No.
Okay.
Nightmares.
No.
No, it's good.
No.
Big
it's
shoes.
Bad. Huge shoes. I know way too much about Frank.
Spinning
now.
Bow tie. Yeah. Very little else.
Speaking of stripper shoes, E3, the show.
Again, segue.
No.
Out of the park.
Sip of my beverage at this point.
But actually, I think this is a. It's not a great transition, but I'm going to make it anyway.
So sip was more of a blast.
Why stop now? You're on a roll.
We were talking about the theater, like showing off at the press briefing and everything. But we also had the theater experience, which I have to say, like our events team just completely knocked it out of the park this year. I was so proud of like actually showing up the first day when we were setting up the theater, getting everything dotted in, but just seeing
it was
like the space and the
mind blowing,
just awesome.
Not only so. Absolutely, the E3 booth area was transformed into something that was incredible. That booth was amazing, but then the special event that we did around Spartan Ops, where we had the press come in and play Spartan Ops hands-on, that venue, like,
was amazing.
I don't even have words
unbelievable
for what the events
and team
did.
Like, I've taken pictures. I think other people have taken pictures. They might have been in the bulletin this week. I don't know if there were any specific.
It doesn't do justice. There's no way you can convey how awesome that space was.
I had a pretty sweet picture.
Is April McKee listening to this in a good way now?
I was going
to
say, this may save us from the whole
April, please
keep
tune
listening.
In for
the
second half.
And, like, I think everyone in this room, we've been to a lot of different E3 parties over the years and everything, but like, just the and it was fun because we actually showed up a little earlier to help with like setup and everything and talking to the people who actually worked at this venue and who had actually put a lot of effort and time in like the light and had actually put like motion graphics associated with
the
images.
They made props. They made custom props.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was extraordinary.
It was a cool event. It was actually pretty laid back by E3 standards, which is very much like in your face, like sell. This one, you could come
play
the game, have some fun, have some drinks. See people.
Hang out with my boyfriend, Nathan.
That's true.
Oh, you're besties with Nathan Fillion as well. My, yeah, he's my bestie.
Boyfriend.
Yeah. And Alan Tudyk, he's my bestie also.
He's my bestie, and Nathan's my boyfriend.
Wow.
That is a lot of beef.
You know, Philip Seymour
Hoffman. I hope Dylan's not listening to this. That's all I got to say.
You know, Philip Seymour Hoffman was at the party that night.
What? Yeah, I heard
that
a rumor. I heard a
Did
rumor
that rumor?
Philip Seymour Hoffman is there.
I'm going to spill the beans on this podcast. I started the rumor that night that Philip Seymour Hoffman was there, and everyone working kept whispering. And then about midnight that night, someone came back to me, and it came full circle, and they're like, did you hear Philip Seymour Hoffman's here in the morning?
Yeah, so I had at least psyched. Five people try to verify that with me that night. And then the next day, everybody at the booth was like, oh, my God. Philip Seymour Hoffman was at our event last time. I'm like, go see Alice.
Is there anything wrong with the fact that I'm way more excited that like half of Firefly was there?
Because no,
I geeked out.
Then fake.
Although
Philip
for the
Seymour
record,
Hoffman.
There was a guy that did sort of kind of look like Philip Seymour Hoffman, which
again, he was your inspiration.
Is his name Vic?
Wow. Kiki was there for my greatest moment of the whole
oh,
V3.
It's true. I did
it was
witness this.
Crazy awesome. I did. This is going to sound random, but you had to be there. So we piled out of a cab. We previously had like a limo van that we were super excited about, and we got downgraded to like a
Prius. Oh, the Mercedes?
No, we still had a
Zoltar. No, we weren't in the van when we came to the party, own party.
What was the driver's name?
Zoltar.
First it was Vlad,
but then it was Zoltan.
Zarko.
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 Yes. Zarko.
And they were both great people.
Vlad.
They were
both awesome.
They were awesome. Yeah. Vlad definitely could have protected you more in case of
he would have
terrorist
taken a bullet.
Threat.
I have a number of skills that I've learned. but we got out of the Prius. This is a true story. And we all walk in our own party, but nobody at the door knows it's your party, right? Because they're just working as like a bunch of nerds.
You have blue armbands?
Yeah. No, we didn't at this point. We didn't have squat.
No.
And we walk in, and there's this huge, like, quite handsome.
He was a strapping.
Striking and strapping.
And striping.
And striping.
Yeah.
Very
striping.
Loved striper. Yeah. Giant, like, Latino guy, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his name was, I want to say Ferdinand.
Oh, right.
Fernando?
Fernando.
It was
Fernando.
He was not a bull. He was just bull-like. And he goes, Mr. O'Connor, I'm very pleased to meet you.
Yeah. And then
we were like,
you were like putting his hands at that point.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
take me anywhere.
Yeah, not quite. Not anywhere.
And I have to say, I was looking pretty cleaned up, and I'm with Frank.
Oh, Kiki. Oh. Like, for people who only have radio, Kiki's what, a trillion times hotter than me?
Completely ignores me.
More than that. There's
Frank
not a scale.
Heart yearns for.
Oh, Fernando.
But it was awesome, because the reason he knew who I was is because he loved Halo.
Yeah.
That was it. He hadn't been informed unless April McKee had done some really good work.
He was a true fan.
He was just a Halo fan, and it was like, that's awesome.
And so we actually had two events that night. We actually had a community event earlier in the night where we actually welcomed some of the professional Halo players that have played on MLG and other circuits and stuff. You can actually come and check out the game. You got a chance to, people have probably, if you haven't, you can see like the gameplay footage, and there's tons of interviews and stuff from that. We also had some members from different Halo communities, halo.bungie.org and NeoGAF, and of course the Waypoint forums, but a couple of folks from there. And so that was actually really fun too, because not everyone that came to this party actually gets a chance to go to E3 and check out that stuff. So this was an opportunity for them to actually be able to play the game and see it. And actually hang out in even a more relaxed environment, because at that point, not everyone's shown up. But, you know, we had Halo-themed drinks and stuff. So
Guilty Sparks. What was the other ones?
The Guilty Spark, which
it's
I
kind of
said,
margarita with blue
a couple years ago.
Interestingly, Vic stole the drink menu.
It's
Frank
in the studio.
Drink menu. So it's actually at my desk.
And also I took a picture of it, too, to make sure I could remember it, because, you know,
we
get hazy during E3.
Yeah,
But you mentioned Nathan Fillion, who we're all big fans of.
My BFF,
Of course,
and Alan Tudyk
voiced. Who I actually chatted with a bit, and Nathan was the voice of Buck in both Halo ODST and Halo Reach. Got a chance to kind of come and hang out, and the cool thing is those guys can sort of, as much as possible, just sort of hang out and be part of the crowd. They don't have to do interviews like every 30 seconds, and I think they really enjoy that sort of thing. But yeah, I can't say enough nice things about the venue there that night.
And the people who organized it and all the people who worked on
everything
the whole week. Like we showed well. All the things we were worried about, they made them go away.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was
and
amazing.
So that's something we should talk about a little bit. It's like, so here in the studio, we've been working on this game for three and a half years. And at this point, we see the game so often that we see it every day. All we see are the warts.
We focus on is like everything that needs to be
because
fixed.
Because if it looks good, we don't need to pay attention to it, because it's out of sight, out of mind at that point. And so the fact that, you know, we were able to get the response we did at this year at E3, absolutely mind-blowing. And I'm speaking for myself, and I think everyone else, just absolutely humbled and blown away, because if you just knew...
Yeah.
as a vacuum gets turned on outside.
It's,
I don't
know. It's a leaf blower.
It's a leaf blower. But if you could know like the amount of hours and just passion and blood, sweat, and tears that have been put in this project, even so far, and we're still like several months out from launch. Something like E3 is so important for studios. We're in the middle of production, is because all the energy that we can kind of bring back to the studio, that's going to carry us across the finish line, and it's going to absolutely help make this product even better when we launch this year.
So I'm not going to lie, like going into E3, I knew that we would show relatively well just because the game is in a good place.
We have an amazing team.
We have an incredible team, and they've done so much great work. You know, I was totally expecting there to be some percentage of people, or some, you know, basically 50-50, you know, these people will think what we're showing is awesome, and then these people will react, you know, with concern or whatever.
It's hard to get people excited, and I as fully admit this, it's hard to get people excited who maybe have, for whatever reason, they look at Halo and it's a franchise that's been around for 10 years. That's a long time in the grand scheme of things, much less video games.
To re-energize people and say like, yeah, please show up for the next, you know, awesome chapter in this thing that you've been playing for
a
decade. Oh, and
PS, we're a developer you don't know.
We're a first-time developer, totally unproven. We've never done anything before, and we're taking over from one of the greatest developers in the entire industry. Yeah. Please show up on day one. And so totally expecting a level of skepticism.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Rightfully so. And I was blown away by the response. Like, I was totally humbled and blown away by the response. Like, we had people... second day of E3 and then third day of E3, when they opened the doors, we had people like stampeding to get to the to the booth. I know we recorded this. People were stampeding to get to the booth. I mean, it was like it totally blew me away. I was grinning ear to ear.
We actually had complaints from the Sony booth, the adjacent Sony booth, because of the chanting happening.
Oh, nice. Is there a noise Jerry ordinance of an E3?
Yeah, Jerry Hook for the win.
Executive producer on our Section 3, which is our back-end and services team. Like, this is actually one of the, like, I think, truly special things about our studio, not to toot our own horns too much, because I know that can come off very cynical, but like, I think it happened last year with Halo Fest. I think everyone was here. Like, there were people from the studio. We were working hard even back then, who volunteered their free time, designers, artists, producers, whatever, who came and worked Halo Fest to do that just because they're passionate, A, about the game, about the project, about the universe, but also just get a chance to actually hang out with the fans, talk with the fans. It's energizing. And Jerry, he was working the line most of the week, which is not an easy task because you have people who've been waiting 4 and 5 and 6 hours. They're tired. And Jerry, just amazing, just knocked it out of the park, keeping high energy, chatting with everyone in line, throwing out T-shirts and all kinds of goodies and everything. So by the time they came into theater to check out the game, everyone was really excited, pumped, ready to go. Like, he had fully warmed the crowd up for us. We didn't have to do
for
much.
For 4 hours.
Exactly.
Like, it's not.
And that energy for us completely transfers to the team, right? Like, the team has been working incredibly hard for a really long time. And, you know, we still have a few months to go. And I think that energy that they were able to feel from the community, whether they were physically at E3 or not, is really what's going to help carry us through the next few months.
And yeah, doesn't it? Like, I think we chip a AAA game. You know, when the game is
not quad A,
but I would
that's right.
I would point out that
quad A is the new throne.
To go from AAA to quad A, Quinte. That's a step.
But literally, this is literally true. Like, the game that we ship, when we ship in a couple of months, a few months, is going to be literally better because of the community reaction to the game. Because people are energized, they're pumped. It's like when you see Rocky IV for all the people of my generation.
Yes.
You come out of that and you're like, I am going to do a training montage of shipping
this
a game
Rocky
that is so incredible.
Such an impact on Frank's life.
It is a huge,
so incredible.
It is my generation's Vietnam, real to be perfectly honest.
But really, I mean, this is a team who has gotten no feedback outside of sort of each other and, you know, the normal user research that we do. And so everyone has been so heads down and doing amazing work, but to really get that sort of external reaction and feedback.
Yeah. And we got really good feedback, like tons of positive. And you know, there was some negative feedback too, useful feedback that we can go back and look at, like, yes, this is something that we can actually make better.
Kids want more bloom. They want armor lock back.
Armor lock's got to come back.
Rubber stamp.
Lots of random stuff. They want random things.
Bumper jumper, just going to cut it entirely.
Nobody needs that.
No, why would you?
Don't want to improve it.
Just kidding. Seriously, just kidding.
No, we are just kidding.
Still in there.
Kotaku.
Yeah, and so like that kind of stuff, it's super important. I mean, we got a chance, and I think really, if you actually look at the amount of content we showed this year at E3, this is without a doubt the biggest presence as far as actual content that Halo's ever had at E3. We showed campaign, we showed multiplayer again, and we showed Spartan Ops for the first time. And so being able to actually show the three big major pillars of our game, we haven't shown everything. There's some stuff left to reveal that I think people will be really excited about. But
and we shouldn't reveal everything. I mean, yeah. This is one of the things that I'm adamant about is like we have to save surprises in campaign and across the game.
We even have conversations about actually, are we actually going to reveal the Prometheans at all?
Yeah, that was a discussion.
Yeah, that happened. And I think it's the right call because like people were able to see that demo in the campaign demo, which, like we said, is pretty heavily scripted and piecemeal. But then people could actually play Spartan Ops mission, which I have to give an absolute shout out to Greg Murphy, who was the designer on that particular mission. Him and our artists and just everyone across the team worked so hard on getting
He's
that.
Called Jimu.
Jimu.
Yeah, Jimu. Yeah. G-MU.
He's been in the industry since he was, Jimu. I think, 9 years old.
And he still looks 9 years old.
Yeah.
Even though he has 9 kids. So
I'm super lucky. I don't know. This is not like I'm going to be a kiss ass, but like I'm super lucky to be working with people like Greg on the Spartan Ops team because I learned so much from those guys because they've been in the industry for so long. They've been doing this for so long. They just know everything. But just knowing what they put into that, being able to get that mission up to pretty much shippable quality and being able to actually introduce that to the people to actually be able to play it. And so the people could actually fight against the Prometheans in a fully organic sandbox environment, which every person that played through it had a different experience. Some people, they took the Watchers out, so not as many crawlers came through. Some people were actually able to take out the Knights before the Watchers, and they had to deal them with the crawlers. And that's actually one of the really cool things about this new portion of the sandbox.
Me and Kiki and Josh were doing the behind closed doors sandbox.
Okay, and
Spartan Ops, where we're fighting Prometheans, and it was like, so we're
every once in a while.
This is naked video, folks. This is under the hood. So our plan is, like, let's super enunciate every single step that we take in this demo, right? So we're speaking to the journalists and the analysts who are in the room. We're saying, okay, Kiki, I'm going to go hit this button. Well, the thing was, like, that was our script. The reality was you ended up having to do that in Spartan Ops because you're like, I really am getting dong-donged by all these Watchers, Kiki. So this isn't just like demo talk. Like you really do need to
French
take
voice
some of
that. So I do want to call out on our behalf, we're playing
it's
the game
easy.
At like 45 degree angle from the screen because of the setup
in
the room.
In a really smelly, humid,
really
all the time.
Incredibly warm, hot room. It was like I describe it
when I was in there the couple of times I was in there.
So I describe it as a gerbil cage because basically when you're in it, you don't realize how incredibly rank and disgustingly stinky it is. And then you exit the room, you spend 5 minutes outside, you come back in, you're like, oh God, you're hit by this wave of stench. And you're like, this is what every journalist experiences coming in to see Halo 4 behind closed doors.
Is the stink.
Is this horrible stench.
That's.
But there were times in those demos where like you're trying to rush because you're constrained for time. So you're like, okay, let's just push ahead. And then suddenly you're surrounded by like 8 crawlers. Yeah. And I'm like, Kiki, they're killing me now. You need to come back and help me. And she's like, stop.
No, I'm killing watchers.
I'm like, no, really, I'm going to die. Oh, okay, I'm dead. And the journalist.
I'm
like,
okay, I'm going to go run away.
Yeah.
Let me go run away.
Yeah, he's
right
hiding
back
to the start of the level.
Frank jumps off the edge of the cliff and falls to his death.
I didn't die, did I?
At least once.
I did that once, jumping into the lava.
Come on.
Because I was staring at it too close.
I saw you surrounded by crawlers and you kind of turned around.
I knew I did it in practice.
You took the easy way out. You just jumped.
I regret nothing.
Screw this.
Yeah. But I know we ruined the giant bomb cast by talking shop. So I'm going to talk shop. Like, the funny thing was, I never got bored.
True.
Like, I got better and better and better, but I never got bored. Like, that was fun, even at 35 degree, like, obtuse angle watching the screen. It was fun.
Agreed.
So that was E3. It's a good chance to pivot use a
segues or
pivot.
Using
pivot.
You wrecked the segue.
Pivot.
Josh, I'm sure a lot of people have seen by now, you got a chance to go on the Jimmy Fallon show this week and actually show off the game.
Yeah,
and Jimmy, Jimmy, we're on first name basis, so I'm going to refer to him as Jimmy now.
Jimmy and I are real close now, yeah.
And so he actually got to be one of the first people to actually play the campaign demo outside of really, you know, Microsoft and 343 Industries.
Yes.
So I've never been on a late night talk show. I know everyone else in this podcast has at this point. What's that experience like?
So I only talk about
exhausted
the Fallon show. Yeah.
You're coming right off of E3.
Super exhausted. On the weekend, I was so sick because we were stuck in that smelly room, which is full of germs, I'm sure.
You got an antibacterial after every chat.
So I don't know how Kiki and Frank clearly have better immune systems than me. I got
super Kiki went to Palm Springs after E3.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. So recuperationville. But I was super sick. I actually was bedridden on Saturday with the sweats and the
we call
fever.
That nerd flu in the business.
Nerd flu. That's exactly what I had. And so I was kind of worried I wasn't actually going to make it, but then it kind of broke on Sunday. So I went there. You spend 6 hours going there. You like go to sleep in the hotel. You show up at the studio, and I was basically stuck in this little closet sized dressing room called the fish room. And there's like, so
fresh
there's
fish first time. On
yeah. So there's show. Like three dressing rooms. I can't remember what the middle one is, but the small one is the fish room. That was me. The big one, which was Maggie Gyllenhaal, was the lion room. Ooh. So you kind of understand.
Or lioness.
Like, she's the lioness.
Yeah.
I'm the fish. And I'm sure the person in between is like,
she's
you know,
cool.
She is cool. Her segment was amazing. It was really funny. But I was stuck in this little room, and I'm stuck in there with Angie, awesome PR person who's there taking care of me. But it's clearly a room meant for one, and there's two of us the entire day stuck there. And I'm going to show this demo that is 100%, you know, designed for a person who knows how to play it to play it. And PR is like, no, you're going to let Fallon play it. Jimmy's going to play it. I'm like, yeah, but if he does anything wrong, this thing's going to break. Like, so we need to rehearse it. And of course, Jimmy's like, nah, I'm too cool to rehearse this. You know, we'll just sort of wing it.
Probably doesn't have time. Busy as show day.
Doesn't have time.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we just had to wing it. And it somehow managed to work.
I got to say, like, because I know you and I talked about this last week at E3. And I thought the segment came off really good and you were yelling at Jimmy the whole time he's playing.
Because I was freaking out. I was like, don't break it.
It was pro tips live on the spot.
The producer told me, he's like, just be really active in coaching him.
So that
he does his thing. He's like, stop yelling at me. I'm like, all right.
Your producer told me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the best / worst part of the experience was afterwards, they give me a nice little gift bag or whatever. And then they're like, can you please sign the guest book, like Jimmy wants you to sign the guest book. And they sent it to me, and Angie, the PR person's like, oh, they want you to sign the guest book, and also they sent you these signed drumsticks from the Roots. And
what?
I am like,
that's
the
awesome.
World's biggest Roots what? Fan, who's the house band at Jimmy Fallon show. So I'm a massive Roots fan, and they sent me these drumsticks from the Roots, and they're autographed. I'm like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever. Thank you so much. I put them in my bag and I signed the guest book. And I'm like, this is amazing. I'm so happy. And I leave to go do something. I come back and she's like, they took the guest book, but they took back those drumsticks. They're not actually for you. So they took them out of your bag. I'm like,
that's
are you serious? They took my Roots drumsticks.
They were yours.
They were in my bag.
Were they for Maggie Gyllenhaal?
I don't know who they were for. Maybe
Maggie
they just
Gyllenhaal
get...
is a beautiful woman, but she has a weird face. I'm just going to put that out there.
You know, that is really not.
She's not going to get me. She can't get me. She's better than me.
She's a giant.
She
I will
me.
Say she's a giant. So she is was she? Wearing. What? She was wearing
she's
heels. I'm like.
She's tall.
5'9" and
she's broad shouldered.
I take it back. I didn't know she was big.
She's at least 5'8".
I was just mad at her for stealing your drumsticks.
She's at least 5'8" plus heels. She's a giant, and she's
I'm sure
awesome.
She didn't know about it. Maggie Gyllenhaal, she's good people. She had no idea.
She knows
would give
now.
Me a drumstick.
Yeah. That's true, because she's totally the same
from McKee's.
She's totally the same.
She is.
Maggie, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are.
Yep.
Enjoy those
drumsticks.
Drumsticks.
Of all.
I'm tiny.
Thanks for subscribing. We really appreciate it. I think we've run out of interesting things to talk about at this point. What about you?
It's possible.
Got anything else? So actually, I should point out
that checking his phone.
E3, you know, we were able to get a lot of people to get a chance to play Halo 4 really for the first time. It's not going to be the last time this year you're going to be able to play before we launch. We talked about it this week on the in the Halo Bulletin. If you haven't checked it out, you should go read it right now. There's funny pictures, awesome pictures, and excellent job as always from Jessica Shea, who's our community manager here at 343. We're actually going to be at, and I say we, because I'm pretty sure I'm not going, which is fine, because I'm busy. We came back and realized we have a lot of Spartan Ops missions to finish.
Just a few, David Ellis.
Five a week. But we're actually going to be, Halo 4 is going to have a presence at the Rooster Teeth Expo down in Austin, Texas.
And as a matter of fact, I was looking at my phone because it was just approving my upgrade to first class. Thank you, Alaska.
The game's going to be playable there for fans.
Of course, we have, we're big fans of Rooster Teeth. Good friends at the studio. We've worked with them plenty in the past. Mm-hmm. Game's going to be playable. We're going to have some cool, maybe never-before-seen stuff there, maybe, perhaps.
We'll definitely be talking about never-before-seen stuff.
Yes.
Or we'll be thinking about talking about things that are never-before-seen. Yeah.
So I hope you all enjoy yourselves in your 108-degree weather down in Austin, Texas.
It's a humid heat. Oh, wait. That's a bad thing, right? Like bats, cockroaches, and humidity, they're not good.
Not together.
No.
Together,
but Austin's a lovely city. Terrifying. And so we look forward to seeing everyone who's going to Rooster Teeth Expo down there. It's always a lot of fun seeing Gus and Bernie and the guys. I say the guys, I can't name you all because there's like a million of you Rooster Teeth guys at this point. And gals.
And gals. And
ladies. To be fair.
Gal is a word that we use.
It is a word.
Yeah.
Especially in Texas.
Yeah.
Do they have barbecue there?
Well, they have a form of barbecue.
And they make a margarita.
For the record, I'm from North Carolina, where barbecue was basically invented. So they have brisket.
I'm a fan of the North Carolina barbecue. I'm with you.
I make a
Kansas City barbecue.
It's solid.
Gives you a run for its money.
It's solid.
No, those are all legitimate, unlike Cincinnati chili.
Really, guys? Get a grip.
We love everyone in Cincinnati.
We love Cincinnati.
Before this November 6th, 2012.
WKRP. Go for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So
I say that. I thought it was too obscure.
So we'll probably do another episode in July. Actually, I should point out that we did record an entire 35-minute segment talking about Spartan Ops, which my laptop ate and destroyed.
It was really fun recording that, though, before it all got incinerated by your technology.
I heard it was the best podcast ever.
That's not true. I was crap on it. It was...
Yeah, but everybody else was great.
That's true. I could have just edited myself out, which probably would have made it better. But we'll try to recapture that magic at some point before launch. I think we're going to wrap things up. Thanks, everyone, for listening once again. Of course, if you're listening to this for the first time, which does happen, thank you for listening. Thanks for downloading.
I'm sorry.
be sure to subscribe to our podcast, whether it's through Zune, iTunes, through RSS. If you just search for us in your favorite search engine, you're going to find it. We really appreciate it. If you downloaded and listened to it and subscribe, please leave us feedback. Give us ratings if you liked it, if you didn't like it, whatever. We really appreciate it. And of course, we'll be back, next month, talk about some more goodies. And until then, thanks for listening.